Well, I know you were kind of telling me when we were just talking a couple minutes ago. So it was October the 11th of 1973.
Yeah.
Can you take us back and kind of explain?
Yeah. Well, in October, I was working at a small shipyard in Pascagoula, and Calvin Parker was working for me, a shipbuilder. And sometime during the day, we decided to go fishing that evening, which I'd done many times after work. So when we got to the river, the Pascagoula River, it began to get late and the fish weren't biting. So we were going to try one more place up by the old Shawpeter shipyard. That's where this thing happened at. And we were sitting there at a pier, fishing out into the river. And I think maybe I was reeling in. I don't remember now. But I heard some hissing sound behind me. And I raised up all. We're sitting down on the pier. I stood up and looked around. And there was something back there. It was hovered about that far from the ground. It's probably 40 foot long. I don't know whether it was round or whether it was oblong because of the way I was looking at it. But I know up toward what I'm assuming to be the front, it was something like two lights, pulsating lights, or they were blue. And it really frightened me, and I didn't know what the heck it was. And by this time, Calvin, he got up on his feet, and we just instantly, there was no one up here to that craft. A brilliant light from outside where we were. And it was three things came through that doorway. Turn that book over on the back and you'll see what it looked like.
Okay.
On the that's primarily what they looked like, yeah. They were very wrinkled and I didn't see any eyes. And I know now, I didn't know then, I know now they were robots. But anyhow, they came around the side of me, one took hold of this shoulder, and I felt pain in it, just instantly pain. Another one took hold of this shoulder, and I just went limp. And they weren't touching the ground. Now, the light was off the ground, and they were just gliding out to where I were.
What, levitating?
Levitating. And I seemed to just, when they took hold of me, I just raised up to the height they were. And we was in that main light, and they was taking me toward the ship, and I noticed Calvin at this time, and when one took a hold of him, he fainted. I didn't know what them, he just passed out for fear. And he don't know where he went aboard the craft or not, and I don't know. But I'm assuming he did. But anyhow, they carried me on the end of that craft, and inside it was a brown compartment or room. And it was very brilliant, like the light was coming out from the wall, the overhead, and the floor. And we stopped. They stopped me, it seemed like, in the middle of the room. And they just left me, but I was still, I wasn't touching anything, in a leaning position. And I could tell that I couldn't move anything but my eyes. I could move my eyes. I could tell that they had left me. And something in the wall in front of me, it came out of that light in that wall and moved up in front of me about this far. It was probably this big around, and it appeared to me like a big eye. But there was something in there, some kind of instrument, or I can't describe what it was. But anyhow, this thing remained there for a few seconds or minutes, and it went downward. And of course, I'm having to assume it went under me and came back up my backside, but after a while, it moved back up in front of me again.
It like scanned you or something.
Evidently, that's what it was. And it stayed there a few minutes, and then went back into that wall and disappeared. And I didn't know what to think of. You know, I was terrified, but I couldn't say anything. And I don't know how long I was in there. I really don't know. But after a while, these things, they came back, moved up to me. I could tell my eyes aside. They took hold of me. We turned around, and they carried me through that main light back where I were and put me down. They didn't throw me down. They leave me down. I don't think they were trying to harm us in any way. But I couldn't, and I didn't know until a long time later on under hypnosis, I found out that there was a window in that room there by where this eye came out. And they was, this is hard, it's even hard for me to believe. They were something like living beings, looked almost like us. I could see through that window. I didn't know that for a long time. It, something that was in my subconscious mind. And, but they looked almost like we did. And what they were doing, evidently, they couldn't live in our atmosphere, I don't suppose. And they had these robots to examine us. We didn't distract their attention one way or the other, seeing they had something to do. And I tried to talk to them, and I couldn't hear myself. You can hear yourself talk. I couldn't even talk. And they done, I guess, what they were supposed to do. And when they carried me out there and let me down, I saw Calvin. And he was standing on the banks of that river with his arm about straight like this. And he was going in shock. And the reason I know, I spent 20 months in, a little over 20 months in combat in career and war. And I know what how men act when they're going to shop. And when I couldn't get up, my legs were still weak. I was trying to make my way toward him to see if I could hit him. And I managed to get up on my feet before I got to him. And I couldn't get him to say anything, just like he was out of it. I shook him, and I even had to slap him. Get him where I could talk to him, and I told him he was screaming, you know, what did they do to us? I tried to assure him that they didn't, I don't think they'd done us any physical harm, and they had gone, you know. When I got him back where I could talk with him, then we didn't know what to do. I didn't want to tell anybody about it, you know, they call us crazy and nuts, you know. Things like that's just not supposed to happen. But anyway, we talked about it again. Before we got home, we decided that we'd call the sheriff department and notify them it might be a threat to our country is what I was thinking about. And I could tell they thought we was pulling the blade. But anyhow, they sent two deputies over there, we were, and asked us to follow them to the station. So we followed them to the sheriff's department. And they kept us in there I don't know how long. They had him in one room and me in one. And then later on, they brought Calvin back in the room with me, and they went out to do something. We didn't know it at that time, but they had a hidden tape recorder. And I think that copy of that tape, I think, is what really finally convinced them that something had happened to us. So Fred Dino was the sheriff. He's deceased now. And I made him promise me that there wouldn't there'd be no publicity about it. Just try to find out. Get it to the proper authorities, whoever they were. You know, we didn't want to get any published about it at all.
Sure.
So they left. We left there without assurance that we wouldn't. There wouldn't be any publicity. And we got home, and it was almost daylight then. And I had a responsibility to the shipyard. I was a foreman there, and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to work. And we got over there at the shipyard, and I got my people off work and went in my office, and the telephone rang. And it was Fred Diamond. No, first one I heard, it was from some news reporter in Jackson. And was asking me what had happened to Calvin and me the night before. Well, I just hung up on him. I didn't know, how did they find it out?
Right.
But then the telephone rang again. It was Fred Diamond, sheriff. And I said some bad words to him and told him that a news reporter had already been trying to contact him. He said, well, I don't know, Charlie, how it got out of this office, but it got slipped out somewhere. So by that time, that day, it was all over the world. My oldest son was, he was in the Marine Corps, but he was in Vietnam, but he was in Okinawa at that time. And they had it the next day in that sergeant's diet paper you get over there. So anyhow, we went down to the shipyard and I couldn't work. So news media you wouldn't believe was coming to that shipyard. Well, somehow the word got to Dr. Allen Hynek and Dr. Hart, Jim Hart up at Berkeley, and Dr. Ed and Honey out of Chicago. They came down here the next day and only taught with us and hypnotized. But meanwhile, let me look ahead of my story. Meanwhile, that day that we were down there, and I got to think, you know, what if we had radiation? I did it with my family and other friends. So I brought that up. They carried us over to the Singing River Hospital, and they didn't have they didn't have the facilities to check us for radiation, but they called Keyes Air Force Base, and they told us to bring us over there. So we got over there. We had an escort there waiting on the gate, and they had cleared the entire area. You couldn't see anybody. And we went to a conference room, and that's right here, they interrogated us, checked us for radiation. And they thought they found a little radiation on the cabin, but I don't guess they did. But anyhow, we came back, and it was the next day, that next day then, that Dr. Heiner and Dr. Harder came down. And they put me under hypnosis, and Calvin, and they had come to the conclusion that something had happened to us. Well, you wouldn't believe it, the madhouse here for 30 weeks. We couldn't sleep, we couldn't eat, and every time that we looked, somebody's trying to interview us, you know. And then a little bit later on, they wanted to take a polygraph test. So I got off work that evening, and I went to the sheriff's department. They had a polygraph examiner there. And when he took me back in the room, he told me, he said, I'm a patient. I said, you don't prove me to be a liar. I said, now, if you want to go out, I'll go out there and tell them that it just wouldn't work. You don't want to take this polygraph test. I said, man, I'm tired. Give out. I want to get home. Give me the damn thing. So when he got through, in fact, he gave me two tests. And Fred Diamond, the sheriff, said when he got through and went on the outside, he said, that man is telling the damn truth in there. And then all the talk shows over the country wanted me there, and they like to drool me crazy, man. And Calvin, he went back, Jones County, back home where we came from, and he had a nervous breakdown, and they wouldn't even let me see him for 2 weeks in the hospital. So it just, that's how it all happened.
Were you wearing a watch by chance when it happened?
No, I don't wear a watch because a watch won't keep time on me. Now, the reason I say it won't keep time on me, I've tried every kind to be thought of. And when I was in Greer, we'd capture those North Koreans, the Chinese. They'd be took all kinds of watches off the GIs. And I tried every kind of watch I could think of. They wouldn't keep the correct time on me.
You knew how long that you had been?
No, we don't know. We went back several times to try to reenact, you know, how long it possibly could have been. It could have been 2 or 3 hours, or it could have been less than that. We don't know.
Now, you always hear about possibly, like, implants or something, some kind of device that they put on you. Have you ever been checked to see if they, when that thing was scanning you, that it put something in your skin or something like that? Or?
No, the only thing that got me concerned now, see, I use the VA hospital. They take care of all my needs. They found something on the back of my eyeball, like a little knot. And they don't know what it is. Well, a long time ago they found it. They don't know what this is. And they even sent me to New Orleans to a cancer doctor. They thought it might be a cancer in the back of my eyeball. And it's not changing. They check me every 6 months. And that could possibly be something they implanted.
It's just like a sty or something like that?
No, it's on the back of my eyeball. I'm on the back side. You're like a little bump. That's what they tell me, what the doctors tell me, you know.
Was this your first experience, you remember, when you were younger, or even now? Are you still getting visited, or?
Well, I didn't know it at that time, but under hypnosis, I don't want to elaborate on this very much. I did find out that, yes, I had been contacted when I was young in Jones County years ago. And I'm not prepared to talk about that. And yes, I've been in contact a lot of times with them since then. I'm not going to talk about that today either. But I will when the time comes.
But I know you don't want to get into it, but the type of contact, is it you like getting a feeling, or you don't physically see them anymore?
No. No. Well, I did. It's in the book. We saw, it was a different craft. My entire family was with me. The next year, on Mother's Day, we went home to spend Mother's Day on the farm with my mother and dad, and we would come back late at night. And we, it was a big ship. My wife became hysterical, and my daughter, she's grown now, had two kids, she was a baby. It woke her, she was screaming. And I was trying to get out and go to the grass, just on the side, and then him wouldn't let me go. And my entire family almost saw that. So we didn't want to publish it. I wrote about it in the book. It's something that I will never get over, and I don't know what. I don't know how it all will initially turn out. I don't know. But I've got a feeling that I'll be able to see it, that there won't be any doubt in anyone's mind that there's other worlds out there that has life on it. It's going to be proven. I was lecturing one time with Jeannie Dixon, and you know who Jeannie Dixon
Yeah.
was? In St. Petersburg, Florida. And when I arrived there, she told him that she wanted to talk with me when I got there. So I went up to her suite, and she had everybody to leave. And she took a reading on me and wanted to talk with me. And she told me, she said, I know this happened to you, and Calvin. But Ben said, I was going everywhere people wanted me to go, I'd go. I wouldn't let everybody know about it then. I wouldn't make it no money, but I mean, you know, I'd do it. I'd lay off more than that. Anyhow, she told me, said, you need to slow down. Said, you'll prove one day that this happened to you. Said, you will kill yourself at the rate that the nature boy. And I asked her, I said, Miss Dixon, I said, do you have any idea where these things might have come from? She told me, yes, I do. She said, I think they come from a small moon off of Jupiter. We know now that, well, there's 9 or 11 moons that Jupiter has. They found one now with possibility of water on it, life. So maybe it's close by, and we think that Jupiter's so big, we don't know what's the problem. We don't call Jupiter. So I don't know. I just don't know.
Have you ever thought about it? Maybe crossed your mind the last 28 years, why, or even longer than that, when you were growing up, why they might have chosen you for some reason, or...
I don't know. The only thing I can figure there is that when I know something to be a truth, the truth, ain't nobody gonna change my mind. I think they wanted me to know. And back then, you know, people wouldn't even talk about UFO. And now it's a common word, you know, household word, UFO, everybody knows about it. So I think they want people to know that whenever they do come down, it won't be so bad. But can you imagine what would happen if the president would come on air now and tell us that we're going to be visited from another world out there somewhere? What might happen? And I don't think they want that either.
Now, you went to Keystone, obviously, and you were interviewed by some folks there. Did they ever say, hey, we don't want you to talk about this, or you didn't actually see what you saw?
No,
you
know, we always hear about that.
No. Well, how did they deal with you? How have they been? Have they ever contacted you anymore? Or?
Oh, yeah. I've talked to many people from the military, and science, I've talked to people from NASA. They've come to my home. You know, and you'd be surprised, the scientists that I've talked to, that they know there's other worlds out there with Bible. And no, my family never had any ridicule. I've never had any ridicule. In fact, we more friends than we've ever had in our lives now. And my daughter was in school. Her they wanted to, you know, to talk to me, want to see what happened. And so they come home with her, you know, and they were really enthused on it. But they had, the young people wouldn't have got to deal with this some of these days, you know. But we've never received any ridicule, you know.
So in your opinion, that this is what you... Let me try to think of it.
It's real.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you think that it's, this isn't some kind of military experiment or something like that.
No, it couldn't have been. No, no it couldn't have been. It had to have been real, something from another world, out there somewhere.
And you said that some people that didn't say anything back then have kind of contacted
you. Oh, yeah,
people.
Yeah. Now, in that book there's a couple of people in Pascagoula that already said then that they had saw it. I've had a man write me from Atlanta, Georgia, just a little while back. He told us, Mr. Tiffin, it's been a long time, so I finally want to tell you that me and two more of my friends saw that night, who were small boys, and said we were so afraid we wouldn't tell nobody and we'd come out then. But he wrote me a long letter and told me, you know, we did see that tonight. And then there was a lady that was out back from somewhere over there that was in the evening in the summertime, you know, hanging her clothes on the back. And she said she saw some kind of craft. It looked like it was coming over that way. And a lot of people saw it. They were a Sunday school superintendent, music teacher. And I don't know who all.
Could be more than that not, you know.
They saw that crack that would come forward in it. They didn't want to get ridiculed. They thought it'd be a lot of, they would be ridiculed for doing it, you know. They would believe things then. But,
You said, I remember you said it was like a crackling or a buzzing sound?
Like a buzzing sound. It, just like a buzzing. Like air, maybe air escaping from a pipe.
Okay.
And it went off.
And it was silent.
Silent. I didn't hear anything, no engine sound, or these things didn't make any noise at all.
And you didn't smell any fuel or anything like that, no jet fuel or something?
No, I didn't put any odor at all.
And when you went back out there to check it out again, could you see, it was hovering, it wasn't like on the ground,
it was
right?
On the ground.
So there wouldn't be any marks or anything?
Wasn't any mark. There's a lot of people went out there that said they did see something out of unusual, but I don't doubt that because it never touched the ground. And I know you've read about Eric Von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods. And he came over here, and he wanted to talk with me. We went out there, and he took, I don't know how many pictures of the place, and he was real enthused about it. You know, he told me that I didn't look out of my mind at that.
Now there's, you know, obviously yours and Calvin's story is a very famous story. There's Travis Walton,
yeah,
out there in Arizona, and then of course Betty and Barney Hill. Now there's thousands, maybe even a million people claim to have been maybe abducted or made some kind of contact. Do you think that a lot of times those people might be exaggerating those stories, might not be as believable?
Well, it could be. I don't know, but it could be.
Right.
Now, if this thing happened to me, I got a letter from Betty Hill in Newport, New Hampshire. And she invited me up there to let's talk about it. She was, maybe these things were the same. So I grabbed a plane to Boston, and William and Dad hit me right to Louis. He met me in Boston. We got to run a car and roll one out to Portland. And I spent a couple of days and nights there talking with Betty. And she wanted to believe that it was the same thing, but it wasn't. I told her, I said, they don't resemble the things that you saw. I said, these things were robots. And then I talked with Travis Walton. He's a friend of mine now. I talked with him a long time in Aspen, Colorado. He was out there at the glacier, and we talked there a long time, then back to Denver on the plane. And that happened to him. I know that happened to him. Betty Hill, but anybody else I don't know.
You know, of course, they made a movie out of his experience. Yeah. Has anyone ever approached you about doing
it? Oh, yeah, like I wouldn't do it. I just didn't want to do it. But now, I'm having talked with some people now. You know, it's been so long now. And it's cost me a lot of money. It's cost me a lot of time and away from my job, away from my family. But now, I'm going to see, you know, if I'm going to make some money on it.
Do you have any regrets that you were there, that place, at that time?
I mean, I've thought about that a million times, and I don't wish it hadn't have happened to me. Mm-hmm. But now I know that there's another world out there somewhere, and I've had an opportunity to meet some of the brilliant scientists in the world, and I've met a lot of people, UFO investigators, and everybody else from all over the country and all over the world. And I don't wish it hadn't happened to me.
You think about all these, it seems like maybe it was 15 years ago or so around here on the Gulf Coast, there's a lot of so-called, you know, sightings that were starting to happen, or people were getting some videotaped footage. Do you think those were, you know, real sightings? Were the Gulf Breeze sightings or something like that?
Forgive me, Lord, if I'm wrong, but that was a fake. That didn't happen. I went down there with Bud. You know who Bud Hopkins is. Mm-hmm. Bud came down from New York. I've become real good. He's been there several times. We've become real good friends. And he wanted me to go with him over to where if that thing happened over there. He told him. Right. To people. They were some people that was working for him that had a photograph of a thing that he made in film. So that was all a fake. It wasn't real. And all them Gulf Breeze sightings they say now, a bunch of bullshit. You know, but excuse my language.
That's okay. That's fine.
But it's not right. Most of the things from that airport or Air Force Base down there, a couple Air Force Bases.
Do you think that these aliens or the extraterrestrials, could they be from, you know, maybe 1,000 years in the future? Are they like time travelers maybe? Or did you get the technology to be able to do what they're doing?
No, I don't think. I think they have the means to come to Earth. I don't know how. What I've thought about and talked with a lot of people, it could be their mind to travel with their mind. I honestly believe that we could use 40 or 50% of our brain more. We could move mountains. We could do anything. Maybe that's the way they travel. Well, you say, why do they bring a spaceship? Well, they got to have things in the spaceship to do the tests when they get here. But probably I'm wrong, but I believe that they do it with their mind. That's why they trust them.
How much do you think the government knows about this? Do you think that they
know a lot about it, yeah.
Do you think they've actually made contact with some of these beings?
I think so. I've talked with some of the astronauts. I talked with Jim McDivitt. He's one of the first in New York. And he told me that whenever they were up there in outer space, they had their rockets all, you know. And he said that the other two astronauts were asleep, and they had their cameras on all the time, you know. And said that he saw three objects coming in their direction that it looked like it was going to be a collision, they're on a collision course. So he told me that he called Houston Control and told them, and they give him permission to fire the rockets and move out of the way. But he said, before we fired the rockets, they swerved and missed them. And said he had it on the camera. And so when they got back down there, said that they told him that there wasn't anything on the film. But he said it had to have been. So he said he told them there wasn't anything on the